This is a Federal Tort Claims Act brought by a prisoner over the delay in surgical treatment of a hernia which has been ordered. The district judge dismissed on statute of limitations grounds. I think it best to address the medical evidence first, and then the rest falls into place. A hernia is a protrusion, as you probably know, in the abdominal wall. You can have hernias, depending on where the hernia is and the size of the hernia, determines whether there's surgery. Some people have hernias for years. Surgery isn't necessary. They go about their life and everything's fine until later it begins to expand. This particular hernia was an umbilical hernia. It's in your navel. Not surprisingly, since there's a scar there and goes back to your umbilical cord, that's a particular area where the testimony of the general surgeons in this case is that you have to be wary, and it's surgery, you have to watch that, and surgery may be indicated depending on its location and its size. Because it's an umbilical hernia, the treating physician who at the prison in Pekin, who was a retired general surgeon, so he's essentially the same as the consultant because he knows general surgery, says that, you know, this has to be repaired because of its location. It will eventually cause problems and risks of incarceration, which is where your intestines start to come out through the gap in your abdominal wall. But it is not an emergency. What happened in the case, the specific dates, it can be done when convenient. The specific dates were July 31st, where the Dr. Otten of 1996 examined the plaintiff and found an umbilical hernia. Then on August 5th of 1996, he ordered that surgery be performed. This was all unknown to the plaintiff, who is a prisoner. Dr. Otten said, "We will get you surgically arranged. It's not an emergency. We got to take care of it." The exact time a prisoner is going to be taken out is, for security reasons, kept confidential. So all the prisoner knows is they come get him one morning and he ends up in the local hospital. On August 27th of 1996, the Health Services Administrator and unlicensed physician's assistant cancels the surgery. There's testimony that wasn't addressed on summary judgment, because that's the essence of the case, that this was negligent. Physician's assistants don't overrule physician's orders. The question in the case is, when did the statute of limitations run? Now, the cases have said the basic torts rule are the statute of limitations begins to run when the plaintiff knows of the injury and its cause, not specifically that it's medical malpractice, but that there's some cause there external. That's an rule easily applied in most tort cases where there's a case of a direct injury, because the person knows he's injured, his arm was broken because of a workplace accident or an automobile collision or whatever. It becomes a lot more complicated when you have a medical malpractice case where there is not a direct injury. The injury, the actual condition, precedes any medical treatment at all. This hernia occurred no matter naturally and or whatever event, it might have been a trauma in the plaintiff, and that was not the date. The date is when the delay in treatment caused him some sort of injury. Well, in this case, the question is, it comes down to the injury is when the accepted standard of medical care required it to be surgically repaired, when it became no longer a matter of convenience, but the order had to be carried out and done forthwith. Judge Mills focused on, well, the plaintiff knew that his hernia wasn't being repaired, and so did the plaintiff's lawyer, so therefore he pegged the statute of limitations date as of August 27th of 1996 when the order was canceled. Well, well, the lawyer does what a person should do. He asks the government, the prison, when are you going to do this surgery? And the record is clear that there weren't any real symptoms causing problems with the hernia. There was a little tightness shown, I will concede, in December, a little tightness shown, mentioned in their medical record, but that the pain is the determinative factor on when surgery was done. So let's look at the January 29th letter. He writes and says, when are you going to do this? If the government had done the surgery within 30 days or 60 days of that letter, there is no doubt we would not be here. There wouldn't have been any injury. The surgery would have been done. The hernia would have been repaired. It wouldn't have grown to the 6 centimeter, the size of your fist, interest, and caused the much greater surgery that caused the problem. If that is not the date by virtue of just the basic injury and from what the medical evidence is, then certainly it is by the trivial injury rule, because don't you want Mr. Massey's lawyer, Mr. Kiefer, to do the responsible thing and say to the government, hey, why aren't you taking this guy out? And, you know, they may have all sorts of problems, triage problems on a lot more serious people. And, well, let's see what the government does. That's why I always peg the date. Well, you got to give them a chance to do it, because if they did it immediately, look at it from this standpoint. When Mr. Kiefer wrote the January 29th letter, which Judge Mills says is the last date it could have done, the government, do we really believe and do you want to hold that if they'd done it on January 30th or January 31st that there was still a claim? Of course there wouldn't be. It wouldn't have been a claim. It's a trivial injury. Well, as it turns out, the government didn't do it till January 28th. Now, the question, there is an ultimate question of fact here to be tried by the fact finder, because if you believe the government's expert witness, Dr. Ewart, who's not a general surgeon and disagrees with Dr. Otten, the retired general surgeon who was a prison physician, and Dr. Marshall, the general surgeon who did the surgery, they both say this was necessary, but this is a summary judgment. Let's accept the Dr. Ewart's opinion. He says it should have never been done. So on summary judgment, if you take his view, the statute of limitations never ran, there was never any injury. The government should win because there's no injury. So if the court has no questions, I see that I've reserved some time for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm James Lewis. I represent the United States, and I would like to make 3 points. And try to answer any questions that you might have. My 3 points are that Mr. Massey knew his injury and its cause more than 2 years before he filed his administrative claim, which he filed in late February of 1999. So his claim's too late under 28 U.S.C. 2401B. My second point is to take what Massey testified himself that he knew and when he knew it, and use his own testimony to fill out the record from his own deposition to show that there is enough for summary judgment that he knew the injury and the cause. And the third argument that I was going to address was the arguments that arise in 1998. Mr. Stegall did not address that. I'm not sure if it's waived, but I will address it anyway. The first question is, how much did Mr. Massey know about his injury and his cause more than 2 years before his administrative claim? I have set that out in our brief. I am not going to repeat it. It's pages 4 through 7 in our brief. It's discussed several times in the brief, including pages 34 and 35. Basically, he knew he had the injury of an unrepaired hernia. He knew the cause, that it was unrepaired, because FCI Pekin was not sending him out for surgery. He was talking to the doctor about it. He thought from the doctor it had to be immediate treatment. That's in his deposition at page 32. He came away from his conversation with Dr. Otten in the summer of 1996 with the idea that it needed immediate treatment. He talked to his Indiana attorney many times at length. He provided the information that the Indiana attorney used in his letters. The letters are exhibits 2 and 3 to the motion for summary judgment. Mr. Massey got copies of those letters, so he knew what he told the attorney, he knew what the attorney told the prison, he got copies of the letters. It's all documented. All that happened more than 2 years before the claim. That leads to my second question, is that enough for summary judgment? Yes, it's Massey's own testimony, it's what he knew, it's when, how much he knew, and when he knew it. He knew more than enough for summary judgment, particularly if you look at those letters. So that takes me to the third question, the final question, what about his treatment in 1998? As I say, that was not addressed. I'm not sure whether that will be considered a waiver. But on the issue of what happened in 1998 after his surgery, he had two concerns. One, he got Tylenol with codeine rather than Vicodin. And two, he was expected to walk. On the issue of Tylenol with codeine, we have testimony of two doctors, the surgeon, Dr. Marshall, and an expert, Dr. Ewart. They both said two things about Tylenol with codeine. They both said, one, it's appropriate. It's an appropriate substitute for Vicodin. It happens to be that Vicodin is not in a prison formulary. And the second thing that both Dr. Marshall and Dr. Ewart said was that giving him Tylenol with codeine rather than Vicodin caused no harm, no physical injury. And physical injury under the Prison Litigation Reform Act is a requirement of a prisoner's claim. 42 U.S.C. section 1997 E, parentheses E. So on the Vicodin issue, which was not argued, it seems to me that that summary judgment is absolutely appropriate. On the walking issue, Dr. Marshall, in his deposition at pages 19 and 20, discusses his post-operative orders, and he says that he wants people to move around. He does these surgeries on an outpatient basis. People go home. They do move around. Dr. Ewart is even stronger in that. On his deposition at pages 85 and 86, he says it's necessary that you move around after a hernia. And if he had been, bed rest had been appropriate, if bed rest had been recommended, he would have thought that was negligent because you do need to get up and move around. So Dr. Marshall and Dr. Ewart, once again, are in complete agreement that walking around is necessary. And that's what the record has. Now, there's the doctor who filled in for Dr. Marshall, who issued some sort of instruction that he be put in the prison unit. But he was never testified, no affidavit, no evidence from him. So you're stuck with what Dr. Marshall says and what Dr. Ewart says, which is people should walk around. And if that's not good enough, you still, again, come on to the question of, does walking around actually cause harm and physical injury? Which is, after all, a requirement for such litigation. And there is absolutely no evidence of harm or physical injury. The evidence from Dr. Marshall is to the opposite, that there's no harm and no physical injury from it. So the early claims arising in 1996 and possibly as late arising as January of 1997 are just plain out of date. And the later claims, which aren't even argued, are unsupported. Therefore, we ask this court to please affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Oral argument is an overview of the case. I don't think I've waived anything about by not addressing the smaller part. It's a weak injury, so, you know, 1 week infliction of pain. I cited to you a cardiac case where the pain from the heart attack is a physical injury. So I didn't, you know, obviously the case wouldn't have been brought over that, even though it's inexcusable what they did. The damages aren't great enough. The discovery rule exists for cases where the injury has not manifested itself or are otherwise difficult to obtain. That's an 11th Circuit case, Diaz. Massey's knowledge in a medical case, like all medical malpractice cases on medical issues, is totally irrelevant. He's not a doctor. He doesn't know when the surgery should be performed. It's the question, again, when the injury was when there was a failure to treat this ongoing disease process that was required by the accepted standard of care. Would have been well satisfied even as late as April or May, and that's why the case is satisfied by the medical opinion. So unless the court has any questions, I think I've adequately stated it. Thank you, Your Honors.